Hello, hello, and welcome to Pimpin' Positivity Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. I am Alethea Crimmins, also known as Miss HDIC. Well, we are here to motivate, empower, and inspire. How are y'all doing? I'm glad y'all came back to talk to me for a little while. And I have a very special guest with me today. He's back again. He is my friend. I love him so much. And on the days where I am extremely stressed out, recently I was going through something and I called him because sometimes we are so stressed out. We're so, like, the world seems like it's crumbling down all around us. We're stuck in our head so much that we forget to do a very important thing. We forget to just breathe. Just take the time and breathe and know that everything is going to be okay. We cannot control everything. We can only control what we can. And sometimes that's not a lot. We just have to let things fall where they may. But I love him because on the days like that, I know I can always call him and count on him to tell me, you know what, Alethea, breathe. You're going to be okay. And I'm so proud of him that he is on my podcast, not just as my friend, but now as an author. He is now an author. And he has wrote this beautiful book. He's written a beautiful book, How to Breathe While Suffocating. This is a story. This, you literally walk through his life with him. If you've ever struggled with addiction, if you ever needed healing, if you ever wanted to know how to find yourself, get this book. Get this book. But without further ado, can I welcome Bruce Wayne Brackett, also known to you as BWB Positivity.
I love you so much. Oh my goodness. If I could have that hype every single day.
Oh my gosh. Wait, Iggy, can you grab that? Oh my gosh. I just have to do it. My fan. Oh, I forgot. Negativity. Be gone.
Yes.
Good. I got it this time.
Good. You got the message loud and clear. Alethea, thank you so much for having me back on your podcast. You are a breath of fresh air, and I am so grateful to be your friend and to move forward in life. You know, exactly what you said that I do for you sometimes. You do that for me, and I'm just so grateful. You know, the communities that we have built up together, completely in a separate way, but our own communities and how we do that, and then we support each other throughout that, is really a beautiful gift. So thank you for being a part of my life.
You are so welcome. Same. So tell us about the book, How to Breathe While Suffocating, a story of overcoming addiction, recovering from trauma, and healing my soul. First, what inspired you to even write this book?
There are so many people in my own recovery and in my own life who have come before me and who have shared their own stories, and they use their voice of empowerment to help people like me get out of the flames. And once I woke up to that and I started doing the work and showing up and taking action for myself, then that really ignited a dream of mine to share my own story. And by listening to the voices of others who came before me, really provided me with my voice. So I, you know, once I sobered up and got to a place where I was okay and grounded and spiritual and level-headed, then it got to a place where I was like, okay, I'm ready to share my journey and to share my story in hopes that it also pulls those who are left in the shadows to let them know that they too can overcome and recover.
I love that. I love that. And there are several things that I love about this book, because it feels like I'm actually living this life with you. The way that you tell your story is literally like we are right there with you, holding your hand, going through everything that you have, just experience by experience. And another thing I love about this book is when you have these little reminders, and I have some like marked off that's like one of my favorites. And I just want to know, where was your mind and what you were thinking when you wrote some of these? Because these are the ones that stood out to me. Mm. One of them is breathe. No matter what it is that you are hungry for, you can find something that will satisfy your hunger or someone to nourish you. I felt like that was extremely powerful. Where were you when that came to you? What space were you in? What time did you go back to? Because this was in chapter 2 when you talked about your foster family.
Yeah. So from the beginning, I was born into detox from drugs and alcohol and removed from my birth home because of extensive abuse, sexual abuse, trigger warning, all of the bad things. And was placed into foster care and later on soon to be adopted, which is very uncommon for the foster care industry. You know, siblings go through it and they become separated and some never become adopted and they graduate out of the foster care. I was very fortunate to not have that experience. So I am aware that that's a very fortunate thing for me. Regardless, in the time and space of feeling like I was just so easily discarded and not wanted within my birth home really stemmed a huge PTSD trauma response from that. And just, you know, feeling like I was removed from something and left so hungry, wanting, for example, just wanting a mother figure and wanting a mom in my life, and not at a very young age, not understanding why or what or who or, you know, and then come to find out that you can be so hungry for something, but still keep going. And then eventually the nourishment that you've been looking for actually is there and has been there. You just have to be willing and open-minded enough to accept it. And for a long time, even living with my adoptive mom, that didn't come into play until much later in my life when I found out, oh, I had that nourishment, even though I thought I was neglected from it.
Yes. And there was a part where when you said that you had the hunger for just a mom in your life, when I read this part and like my heart just went out to you when you asked your first foster mom, like you literally said, like, it felt like you had walked into heaven.
Yeah.
Like you felt like you had walked into heaven. Like you had never seen anything like this. And you said, Sheila, the two questions that I would come to ask over and over in the days that followed, where is my mommy? and will you be my mommy? Oh.
Yeah.
My heart. I was like,
Sheila, who has since passed on, was a very special person to me growing up. And even though she did not adopt us, she was still very much in our life. And from her, and then passed on to any woman that I came across, I don't care if it was a woman that was coming out of the grocery store and we were going in, I would stop her and like yank on, you know, I'm like 3-4 years old at this point. And just asking, like, you know, will you be my mommy? So every single woman that would pass me and be like, are you my mom? Will you be my mom? So I was so hungry for that connection, that I was game. I was ready, willing. I was like, any woman who comes my way, you want to be my mom, honey, sign up. Applications are open.
You could be my mama. You could be my mama. You could be my mama. You want a son? Because I am open.
Right, exactly.
Like, I just felt like I'm just envisioning in my mind this little boy that has no earthly idea what's going on, what's happening. All I want is my mom. Where is my mommy? And would you be willing to take me in, love me, nourish me, be my mommy, be what I was missing? Like that, just think about that. When something has been taken from you, you have no idea why, and you're so hungry for it. And you don't know if you'll ever get it again, and you want it so bad that you would take it from anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, you would take it from anybody, anywhere. It doesn't matter where it came from. Bruce, literally, he was asking any woman that he saw, will you be my mommy? Because you had a hunger so bad. You wanted to have someone to love you and care for you and make you feel safe so bad that you didn't even care where it came from.
Are you a huge cunt?
Us too.
Wait, can we even say cunt?
Of course. It's empowering these days. Cunt, 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 cunt. I'm Ange Balasone, a.k.a. the drag queen, Fat Girl Gina.
And I'm Mike Fales, just a normal gay guy, I guess?
And we're the hosts of The Big Cunty Couch,
a gorgeous new talk show podcast where we invite queers and peers to sit bitch and be fierce on a huge-ass couch
while we gab about all things gay.
So come get cozy
and cunty
with us. We're pan for platforms, so find us anywhere online and get listening, sweetie.
Or watching.
Or both.
Otherwise, why the hell am I in full drag?
And we'll see you on The Big Oh, wait, I thought we were going to say that together.
No. On The Big Cunty Couch. Mwah.
No, and I didn't care where it came from, and which is, you know, being abused by your mom, your actual mom, and then being removed from her and still seeking that mom figure in your life. Like I said, I did have it. My adoptive mom, who was our second foster care home, they did adopt us and gave us everything. I love you, mom and dad. You're saints in my eyes. You're incredible. So I did get that, but that removal of being hungry from something transpired into something else later on in life, which was addiction for me. And I was so hungry, chasing that missing piece, that I plugged in addiction to that. And you can read in the rest of the book where that took me. And it wasn't pretty, but there, again, like, once you start to do the work for yourself, when you really want to better yourself as a human being, you start to realize that nourishment that you can give yourself every single day can be there. Yes. It doesn't have to come from an outside source or an outside person. It can come from you. So that's really why I wrote that little breathe section. And I do like to, I love the way that Wiley helped me. Wiley's my publisher, how they helped me design the book with having those breathing sections at the beginning and ending of every chapter.
I love that part.
For it starts in terms of me speaking to the reader, and then it ends with the reader saying it to themselves so that they can ingest it.
And even reading the part about just reading that section about the hunger and you wanting something so bad that you would be willing to get it from anywhere. I knew that you were talking about you as a child living that life, but it related to me on a different level
because
for me, when I read that and I thought about it, I was like, oh my gosh, I've been in so many horrible relationships because I never really had a male figure in my life. And I had a hunger for validation that I never got from a male. So I would always seek it from anybody that would validate me in some type of way. If anybody would tell me, oh, you are so beautiful. Oh my God. Like any, I was crave it. That was my addiction. And it didn't matter who it came from. As long as you would validate me, love me, need me, it didn't matter who it came from. That's how that hit me. So I love how this book is relatable on so many levels. So many levels. And I love it.
That means the world to me. I that was the goal of the book, was to have it be relatable so that you can see your own journey and forgive your past and forgive yourself for your past actions and to reflect and to see where you started to where you're at now, and that you can overcome and recover and just relate so that you no longer feel alone. Even if the situations are completely different, you no longer feel alone. So to hear you say that is a huge gift.
Oh, well, I truly mean it, because that's how it affected me. What was in writing this book, like, what was the most challenging chapter, the most challenging story to relive and rewrite? Because listen, I am also in the process of writing a book, and I couldn't get past certain things because once I started to talk about it and relive it and say out loud, I was doing more crying than anything else because I hadn't revisited that version of me in such a long time. I put it in the back. I put it in my rear view. So for me to revisit that, it felt like it was happening right now. Like I can almost see it playing in front of me like a movie. And so what was your story, your chapter, your time where you felt like, okay, this is so hard, but I gotta do it?
Yeah. Oh boy. There's a lot of sections throughout the book that triggered me, that brought up a lot of PTSD. There are things, I'm so grateful again for my mom and dad. Throughout the whole course of me growing up, they kept all of my files from foster care, from the police reports, from the adoption, from different therapists that I had for growing up, school letters from teachers and counselors and whatnot. They kept everything. So when they knew that I was serious and I was getting the book published, they sent me those files. And there were things in there that I didn't even know of what teachers were saying behind my back about who I was from a very young age. There were things in documents that I did not remember from social workers or therapists. So just to go back and reread those, to read the journal that my first foster mom wrote while we were in her care, fresh after being removed from all of the abuse, was horrific. There was a lot of things that I was like, oh, wow. Oh, okay. This is from someone else's perspective of something that I blocked out for a long time. And just to go back, and a lot of this stuff I did know, because I've talked about it in therapy for the majority of my life. Mm-hmm. It was surprising how many things I did not know or how many things I blocked out that then I was like, oh my God, I do remember that. Like, whoa.
Yes.
So the first two chapters were very challenging to not necessarily write, but to go back with my editor and process that in terms of what is important, what we really should keep, what we can get rid of. I was like, we can't get rid of anything. You know, this is what I'm thinking because it's my story and I have to get it out there. But truly, like, how is this going to be helpful for someone else? So I had to approach it from that side. Fast forward for the huge majority of the book is over the course of the summer that I ran away. So all of the different mm-hmm. cities that I went to, reliving my events in Boys Town, the first time that I tried crystal meth and the sexual assaults that happened during that time at a very young age, 16 years old, and just going back and writing that was a roller coaster in itself, you know, like, and it brought me back physically to that moment where I could smell the drugs burning. I could smell it. And when you live through something like trauma or overcoming from addiction, for anyone who can relate to this, later on, when you really start to do the work, you go back to that time. And that's how you get through it. That's how you really start to dive deep and do the work so that you can overcome. This was healing. It was hard, but it was healing.
That was actually one of your sections. You said, breathe. Just because you have physically left your trauma behind does not mean it can no longer affect you. It follows you forever. The mm-hmm. only way to fully recover is to honestly face it so you can deal with it and move on. Yep. And when you said that you didn't know things that people said about you, you didn't know things that teachers or doctors had said about you, it brought me to a specific section in your book. So for people that do not know, you and I are a part of a very special, beautiful, happy community. We are part of the LGBTQ community.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
And a lot of people are under the false impression that this is by choice. And I wish that people would know that we don't choose this life. Nobody would choose this life for themselves, because the amount of shit that we take, the amount of shit that we go through on a daily basis is not a choice that we would make for ourselves. And I really, really want people to know and understand this. So when you put this section in your book, I was like, okay, mm-hmm. okay.
we don't choose it any more than the choice to breathe. We don't choose it any more than just have that natural ability to keep our heart beating. We don't choose it any more than we're born into our culture, our skin color, the location in which you are born. We don't choose that. It just is. It just is.
So I'm going to read this section and I'm going to ask if this was something that you didn't know until you got the journals. And how did it make you feel when you read it? It says, as I got older, I had a hard time fitting in. Even at doctor's appointments, people passed judgment on me. I was not yet the author of my life. We believe that Bruce has a gender disorder. One doctor would say, "How can you say that? He's only 5 years old." So just imagine a doctor telling your mom, "Your 5-year-old has a gender disorder." And mom was like, "He is only 5. He does not have a gender disorder. He is gay." That brought me so much joy. "He is gay," my mother would say boldly. "Well, he's so young. I don't know if you can say that yet about him," the doctor would say. "Exactly. So you can't say that he has a gender disorder." Like, 5 years old.
Yeah.
Did you know that this happened, or was this something that was in a journal, in the journal that you read? Like, how did you feel reading that at 5 years old? And people do not believe that children that young,
oh yeah,
can know who they are at that age, can know, "Yes, I'm feeling this way. I am gay." You were 5. And this doctor told your mom, mm-hmm, "Bruce has a gender disorder." What even is a gender disorder?
Like, I was just going to say,
like, what?
No.
Who diagnosed that? Like, what medical book did you get this from, doctor whomever? And I hope that you're watching and listening, or somebody shares this with you. Because what med school did you go to?
Yeah.
That.
And I'm so glad that you just brought that up, because that's the point. It's not even the fact that people were trying to label who it was that I am at such a young age.
At five.
It was the fact that they were already just saying that this is a disorder. This is wrong. This is something.
That part.
And it's not a disorder, gender disorder. It doesn't matter how you identify. You matter as an individual, as a person. And that is what makes you. Your identity really has nothing to do with it. It's just a part of you. And to be able to just to label that and say that this is a disorder, I think that's the utmost joke for a medical professional to be saying about anyone, let alone a 5-year-old.
It was it was almost like they were putting it. No, not almost. How I took it and how I read it was that he was putting it in the same category as a mental illness.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because when he said gender disorder, I immediately thought, well, you're putting that in the same category as a mental disorder. Like, he has a mental illness. Like, you're diagnosing him with this disorder at 5 years old. Like, how did you even come to this? So do you remember 5-year old Bruce, and what would have made him say you have a gender disorder, and what would have made your mom say, "No, he's gay"?
Girl, I have no idea. I don't know what. Like, are you kidding? Let's see. I'm straight. I'm super straight. No. I've always just been me and expressive. And if you want to put labels on it, flamboyant. I've always just been more flamboyant than other boys that I grew up around, you know, with like, put it on a scale, who cares? But so I think that's what really brought them to believe that I had, that I was transgender. And just because of the way that I would express myself. And my mom being amazing and having her own brother who's gay, and she's from San Francisco. They're much more progressive. She just looked at him and was like, are you kidding me? Like, no, this is such a joke. So I didn't know that until years down the line. And my mom told me, I don't know. I was probably 15 years old by the time that I first heard that. So I've carried that through my life, and it didn't really affect me. It was more of a joke. Like, that's a funny punchline. But it didn't hit me until later on in life that was like, they were trying to say that I had a disease. Right. They were trying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
No. Yeah. So no, that's now again. And now, because I processed it, now it's just funny again. I'm like, what an idiot. I love you.
Right. But what?
Yeah.
All these.
Pick up a book.
That just bothered me. Like, so, cause I was reading it and I was literally the words that came out of my mouth out loud when I read that part was, I know you fucking lying. Like,
yeah,
like that was literally the words I said out loud. I was like, what? But then I read mom and I was like, mom's a fucking bad bitch. Oh my God, I love mom.
She really is.
I was like, I love mom so much. Like, oh, so what's challenges, because you spoke about the journal, you spoke about things that you didn't know. What challenges did you face while writing this book? Like, was there any time that you were like, you know what?
Yep.
This is too much. I'm just gonna put this down because I can't. I tried. This is too hard. Like, what challenges did you face while writing, then having to read it and write some more?
Yeah. So the reading and writing process, because I have done so much work, this is the value of therapy. Anyone who's listening, this is the value of therapy. You're able to process. You're able to process things in the way that you should in order to move forward, if you're really doing the work and you're being honest with yourself about it and not just saying what you think the therapist needs to hear or wants to hear. No, who cares? Do the actual work for yourself and you will move forward. So a lot of this material within the book, I have worked on a lot. What was really challenging for me was watching Teo go through and read it and then seeing the emotions that it pulled out of him. I've hardly seen this man cry, and he definitely opened up and to the point like that was heartbreaking for me. What was the hardest thing was me going through and asking permission for people who were in the book, if they wanted to be named, if they wanted their name to be changed. One of my sisters, who unfortunately I can't name, didn't want anything to do with the book. Wasn't excited. Like, thought I was going to be sharing her side of the story, and I was like, well,
oh wow,
no, this book is from my perspective.
Yeah, like this is your
life.
Yeah.
And that really, really hurt. But I almost immediately just had to be like, okay, whatever you want, I will take you out. I won't even mention you. And I that's just how it's going to be. I'm not going to fight you on this, which is unfortunate, but I'm not going to fight you on this. So I will grant you that wish. Excuse me. And then having the conversation with my actual birth mom about it and having her response, basically just being like, I don't give a shit. I don't care. Like,
wow. Like holding no,
nothing, you know, that hunger that I was seeking for all of those years, and still just, there was nothing there, which She's just a hurt person and she's sick. And I hold a place in my heart for her from a distance. And I still wanted to respect her enough to be like, hey, so I'm sharing the truth. You're a part of the truth. Do you want to be named or not? And she's like, I don't give a shit if you name me or not. I don't really care even that you're writing a book. I hope you make millions from it. And then, you know, like me come back into my life and pay for shit. Like, you know, and I'm like, oh God, you're still just so unwell. And that breaks my heart. So I for those who didn't want to be in the book, I took them out. And for those who wanted their name changed, I changed their name and their description or identity or even where they're from, you know? So everything in the book is true, but it's just little details like that right. I had to change, which changing them wasn't necessarily hard. It was the conversation of asking that and
right
for those specific people. And I was like, wow, that sucks.
Well, I can tell you this. I appreciate and respect you for when you did have that conversation with your birth mom. It could have went a whole other way, but you let your mom be who she was. You let her be her, because you cannot control how she feels, how she thinks. You let her be her, and you chose to, I just wanted to let you know, I'm going to love you from over here, and I'm going to let you do you, and you have a good day on purpose. You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Right.
And please stay over there. Yeah.
What message? Because the resounding message after every breathe section, it always ends with keep moving forward. Other than the message of keep moving forward, what message do you hope that readers will take away from this book?
I hope that readers are able to forgive themselves. Self-forgiveness is a huge missing key to a lot of people. It's harder to forgive ourselves. I really want people to allow themselves that capability of forgiveness so that they can keep moving forward. Because when you beat yourself up over something that you did in the past, you were living in the past. You're not a museum. Don't stay there. Keep exactly. going. Dust yourself off. Be the exhibit that travels around. You don't have to be the structured one finite piece of location and never experienced anything because you're so busy beating yourself up for something. I did a lot of shitty things and, you know, in my life, and it's in the book. And for people to also see that you can do so much destruction, you can come from destruction. It doesn't matter where you come from, what you did, what someone did to you. That doesn't define you. If you don't let it, it doesn't define you. Keep moving forward.
That's a fan moment. That's a fan moment.
Keep moving forward.
You do not let your past define who you are, because you are the author of your own story. You better speak.
Your mental health, your trauma, your addiction, your struggles, they're beating you up enough for you.
Yes.
So why beat yourself up even more? You know, like, for the majority of time, my brain, all of those lies that we tell ourselves that we're not worthy enough, that we're not good enough, that, you know, we're not capable or structured Correct. Enough or, you know, like Jeez. Our brain feeds us and sells all of that bullshit. And the other half of my brain buys it. And then I have to get out of my own head and be like, wait.
Overthinking. Get out of there. Get out of there. You don't live there.
It wasn't for me. None of that was for sale. You know, so yeah, I really, the message of overcoming and recovery for anyone, no matter what situation that you were, what mountain you were climbing, you can climb it. Take your time. It's not a race. Get to the top of the mountain in whatever way that is safe for you, and rest when you get to the top of the mountain, because rest is moving forward. Rest is a huge part of recovery. And when you're ready to climb the next mountain, then take that journey.
Well, that is a beautiful way to end this part. Oh, y'all. Bruce, can you please, I need you to put it in the camera so y'all can see. And then, okay, this artwork here, honey, you're sickening, okay?
That was taken. Stunning. Okay. That photo shoot was done by my friend that I was in an off-Broadway show with many years ago. Jenna Hokinson, I love you. Thank you for that photograph.
So where can people purchase this book? When does the book launch? Where are you going? What cities will you be in to launch this book? We need all of this information about this amazing book, where you will be when it launches, a list, everything. Let's go.
Okay. Well, thank you so much again for having me be a part of your Pimpin' Positivity family. And I love you to all of the listeners. Yes, my book, How to Breathe While Suffocating, comes out April 9th, which is like right here.
I know.
It's going to be, it's already global. It's been ordered internationally, and the book tours is taking me all over the United States. If you go to howtobreathewhilesuffocating.com, you will be able to see all of the different places where you can pre-order the book or order it since it's coming out the 9th. But I highly recommend go into your independent bookstore, support them, give back to the mom and pop shops, yes. Go through bookshop.org because they give back to independent bookstores. That's a very great way, where we can just support each other as a community. Plus we're doing 15% off on bookshop.org. And when you order through bookshop.org, you can put in the discount code, all capital, love booksellers, all one word. And follow the redeem, the receipt confirmation. There's going to be a redemption in there where you can get a personalized hand sign fan that matches the book. So, which is right here.
Oh, yes. Love it.
Yes. Love it.
Okay. So now I have to go get me a fan so I can have two of them.
I need two fans now. Yes. And Bruce, the book tour is taking me everywhere. I mean, we start April 9th in San Francisco. We go to Las Vegas, Palm Springs, Los Angeles, Boston, Ann Arbor, Detroit, Salt Lake City, Austin, Texas, Seattle.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. And still, some locations are still coming in, so you know,
we
might be in New Orleans
in a city a city near you, in a city near you. So Bruce, if people want more of you, if people want to follow you, if people want information on you, where can they find you?
I am bwb.positivity on all social media platforms, meaning Instagram, TikTok, Threads, YouTube, and my personal website, which also has a lot of the book information and book tour, but as well as my portrait art, is bwbart.com. And the majority of everything is on that website. But yeah, bwb.positivity on social media.
I love it. Thank you again so much.
Thank you
for writing this very inspirational, transparent book, letting us into your life. so that you can heal other people's lives. That's what it's all about. Letting other people into your life so that you can help others heal.
So
thank you for this.
Before we go, I do have to ask you, what was your takeaway? Like, what was something that you gained from the book that maybe you didn't realize about yourself?
The validation, like, I didn't realize what my addiction really was. Like, everybody has an addiction, and most people just think it's drugs or alcohol or sex, but it can be so much more. And mine was the need for validation and attention. That was my drug. That is the thing that I felt was taken from me. I felt like I never got it. I felt like it was taken from me, and I craved it. And I couldn't put it into words until you said the hunger. And feed me. And I could never get enough. I could never get enough until I learned how to validate myself. Until I learned how to love myself and to give myself what nobody else could ever give me. Like, we look for things. I've looked for that my entire life. My entire life. Not realizing that everything I've been through the whole time, I had it in me.
Yes, you did. And yes, you do. And to all of the listeners, so do you.
And even though we lived different lives, it's like a lot of the things that you experienced, I did as well. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, it makes you feel like it's not just me.
It's not.
Oh.
You were not alone. You were not alone, my friend.
It just really makes you feel like it's not just me. And there's other people, because you get embarrassed of your story, of some of the things that you've done, and you don't really want to tell it. And to see you be so open and transparent, and to know, I've done this too, and it's okay, because look how he came out. So if he can come out, I can come out too. And I did. So thank you for telling your story.
Cool. Thank you for that. That means a lot to me. And
okay, Bruce, and doggone it.
you came out of it. I am proud of you. I can't wait to read your book.
Child, it's going to take a long time, because, baby,
because
I keep crying.
That's okay.
I have to face some demons.
Yep. It's the only way to get through them. You got to face them.
But I have to learn how to breathe while suffocating. Y'all, please. If you don't get any other book this year, get this one.
Thank you.
And let his life change and heal yours. Because it definitely was an eye opener. And it made me see things about my life differently. And I'm no longer ashamed of what things I was trying to hide and put behind me and not talk about because of you. I'm no longer ashamed to share that. So thank you.
I love you. Thank you. I'm very proud of you. And I want everyone to know that, yes, there's a lot of things in this book and you are not alone. And if you are struggling, in the back of the book, there's a resource guide to so many different hotlines that you can call if you're struggling with mental health or addiction. You can call 988. There's international hotlines back here for Canada, United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, Brazil, Mexico, worldwide, all over the United States for suicide prevention, abuse prevention, emergency hotlines, addiction recovery, mental health resources. You are not alone, my friend. There are people who have gone through it, like you, Alethea, like me, like your neighbor, in which you know nothing about what they are going through, yet you see them walk out and pick up their newspaper every day and they give you a big old smile with their cup of love, and you have no idea what's going on in their life, yet they are just stuck in the darkness. You don't have to stay stuck. You can get out of it.
I love this. I love this episode. I love this podcast. I love this book. I love you.
I love you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Listen, if you liked what you heard, first of all, get the book. Second of all, go like, follow, share, get in touch with, email Bruce. Talk to him. Know him, because to know him is to love him. He's the most genuine person I've met. As you continue to go out there and be great in their face, know that you are not alone. Keep moving forward.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Be great in their face. And as always, have a good day on purpose. You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Not pop, because bitch, you're gorgeous.